gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stewart. And Stu, it is Draft Night Eve. How you feeling?
Draft Night Eve. It's second only to Christmas Eve. Yes, James, we're having a good time. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. Just getting through another week of work. Looking forward to having a little bit of time off. I will be out all of next week, so we'll probably, I don't know if we're going to record before. We're going to have a review episode for the draft, which is going to be tomorrow, whenever we get that done. I'm going to looking forward to having some time off from work. I'm really excited for that. We're going down to Mexico for 7 days. It should be an awesome time. Get some sun. And if I haven't mentioned already that I'm excited to not work for a little while, then I can go ahead and say that now. I'm ready to not work for a while. But I've got a lot to talk about tonight, James. And first, I want to hear how you are doing.
I'm doing well, thanks for asking. It has been a week of good weather, so I've finally been able to be out and do stuff in the yard, mow, and patch all of the holes that Indy has made in the backyard. So we're working on that. But yeah, overall, life is good. So Stu, tell me what you're drinking this evening.
This evening, I am still drinking the second half of the Sturdy Shelter Bourbon Barrel Aged Stout. I meant to finish it after we were off the air last week, since I wasn't even halfway through at the end of last week, and it just got to be a little too much for a weeknight. So I still have it. It still tastes good. James, I want to hear what you are drinking this evening.
All right, so I saw this at the store yesterday, and I wasn't even really looking for beer, but I saw this thing sitting on the shelf, and I was like, that's crazy. I have to try it. So, from Solemn Oath Brewing, I am drinking the Cold Black Knight Black Kolsch. So, I'm a big fan of the Kolsch style of beer, and especially, like, this time of year, it's great for, like, spring and summer. Really crisp, nice, light beer for all that. And so when I saw Black Kolsch, I was like, that just seems too wild to not try. So I've already tried it. I opened it, and the first smell that comes out of the can, I'm like, oh, this is like a Modelo Negra clone. And I'm not a big fan of Modelo Negra, but I poured it, and I actually tried it. I'm like, oh, this is great. This is like a real nice roasted malt type thing. Almost tastes like the lightest iced coffee you could have, and like a really nice malty finish. I like it a lot. So let's crack. Well, I guess
pick it up.
I will crack this bad boy in 3, 2, 1, and it exploded all over my microphone. That's going to be a problem I'm going to have to deal with later.
You take your time. We have some segments of news to cover, which is really exciting. We honestly haven't had a whole lot of news recently, but there was a big on topic for this evening's discussions, James, trade that happened in the last week or so. The Bengals end up trading for edge rusher Dexter Lawrence and sending away the 10th overall selection in the draft. So I think it was a one-for-one deal. The Bengals might have been a little hesitant to send a little more than that, but they're not really known for their drafting. Their defense has always been quite poor, so honestly, seems like a win-win for both sides. That is one that really turned a lot of heads going up into the draft, so we'll have to see exactly how that is going to change everything. So the pick went to the New York Football Giants, so we'll see what they end up doing with that tomorrow night. The second little piece of news that we wanted to cover is one in regards to the Dallas Cowboys. So You may be aware that George Pickens is their kind of wide receiver 1B, is what they call it. He's the wide receiver 2 behind CeeDee Lamb, but he had an excellent season in 2025 and really outperformed CeeDee Lamb, who was hampered with injuries. The idea is, well, that you'd think that they would extend him. Well, they are not. They have announced that they are not going to extend him, and he will be playing under the franchise tag. But that always raises that question. Is this player the type of person who is going to hold out for a new contract before he plays again? Because, of course, if he plays under the tag, get injured, lose out on a whole bag of money, James. Anything from the microphone issue or any little thoughts on the two pieces of news that have broken in the last few days?
Well, my microphone is fine. Thanks for asking. But both of those, I think, are significant, but I think the Dexter Lawrence piece is a bit more. After losing Trey Hendrickson, I think this is a natural move for the Bengals to make. You look at the kind of guys they could have gotten at 10th overall. There are a few solid edge rushers, but there's so few sure things in the NFL. Getting a guy like Dexter Lawrence, who we know can produce, I think is a really smart decision for them. And for the Giants, they now have two top 10 picks. That is something I think that a lot of people would love to have. And while this may not be the biggest draft for like offensive skill players, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, this does have the potential to be a big draft for offensive line and defense. So there is a lot that they can do with those picks, including potentially trade back into future drafts. There's a lot you can do with two top 10 picks, and I can't see a world where it's a bad idea to do what they did. As for George Pickens, he seems like he might be the kind of guy who would hold out. And I think he's also probably a guy who, with the year he's coming off of, he deserves to get an extension. So he, one, deserves to hold out, but also deserves to make that extra money he would make under the tag. So it would not shock me if really any of the gamut of things that could come of this happen. I could see him playing under the tag and taking the nice payday. I could see him holding out to get that extension. I could see him just refusing to play for the Cowboys, period, and trying to get them to release him, which I think that's by far the least likely situation. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're ready to talk about the draft, Stu. What do you think?
I think we can, and you kind of alluded to it, is that this draft feels a little more non-skill position heavy, so it's going to be really important for offensive lines and for defenses. But the true, you know, make-or-break offensive prospects, they're a little few and far between. If you wanted to compare running back heavy versus wide receiver heavy, this draft is a little bit more wide receiver heavy than running back heavy. There's really one name at the running back position that stands head and foot above the others. But there's a good series of wide receivers. There are three big names there at the top, and then an assortment of other names that could really start to flash and jump up draft boards and go to some pretty interesting places. And we'll talk about some of the places we'd like to see some of these players. But I see no better place to begin than talking about it's not even a consensus number one. Everybody knows that he's going to go number one to the Las Vegas Raiders already. And that is quarterback from my IU Hoosiers, my professional alma mater, even though I did not watch a single game. And there is a good reason for that, is because if I did watch a game, they would have lost a single game this past season. But is Fernando Mendoza, the Heisman winner, college football champion, had a dream season. There is nothing left for him to do at the college level. Might as well get that bag, go first overall to the Raiders, and see if we can't turn that ship around with the likes of Ashton Jeanty and Brock Bowers. So Mendoza, he's not exactly mobile. he's more of a pocket passer type. The best thing I think going for him is that the Raiders signed Kirk Cousins. And I just want to draw the parallels to seemingly Kirk Cousins' game and Fernando Mendoza's game. And the fact that they look the same as well, they also kind of act the same. I'm sure Fernando Mendoza will... he's probably going to name Kirk Cousins the godfather of his first child or something like that. I could see their relationship going like that. But he's going to have a good mentor, someone who's built an entire career off of the same way that Fernando Mendoza plays the game. He's accurate. He has good size. He's tough. He's just not exactly quick, in my opinion. So he'll definitely be a good NFL quarterback. As far as the fantasy conversation goes, in two quarterback leagues, he's definitely going to be important to be aware of. He's going to be important on the consideration of drafting Brock Bowers and Ashton Jeanty, or the Trey Tuckers, or the Jack Beshes, or things like that. I just don't think in single quarterback leagues, like 10 or 12 quarterback leagues, he's really going to find his way on too many rosters. It would be a lot to ask to do a Peyton Manning or an Andrew Luck and completely turn around the league's worst offense in 2025 that quickly. So, James, let me hear your thoughts on Fernando Mendoza, and then give me the next player you want to talk about, whether it's Ty Simpson or a different player group entirely.
So talking about Fernando Mendoza is... this might be a time when I'm going to get myself in trouble. I think that after spending some time watching film and seeing what scouts have to say about him, I'm not a big fan of Fernando Mendoza. Oh. And that's not because I'm an IU hater.
It is because you're an IU hater.
But going into this whole process, I was saying his ceiling is Daniel Jones. After watching film and seeing all of kind of the minutia of his game, I think it might be less than that. I think that Fernando Mendoza is a guy who does a lot of things well, possibly even everything well, but nothing great. He doesn't really have anything that is really elite for an NFL quarterback. And a lot of people would say his accuracy is his calling card. That's sort of true, but when you look at the kinds of difficult throws he's making, it's a little bit concerning. He's very good at putting balls in places that only his wide receivers can catch it, which is great for an NFL quarterback, but when you think about that for a college guy, Stu, we were kind of talking about this today. There's a big difference between college DBs and NFL DBs. If you throw a ball into coverage, a DB is right on top of your wide receiver in the NFL, and you throw it to a place where only that your wide receiver can catch it, most of the time it's an incompletion or it's a fantastic job by the wide receiver. If you're doing that in college football, that's a lot of times because you're making the wrong read. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. I'm also concerned about his high pressure to sack ratio, which if you watch him in the pocket, yeah, I would really kind of push back against him being a pocket passer, at least in the traditional sense. He doesn't seem incredibly comfortable in the pocket when he has to move in it. It kind of seems like he guesses a little bit, and I think he often shifts into where defensive pressure is coming to. And with an offensive line like he's going to get with the Raiders, that's just not going to be disastrous. That's going to get him hurt. So I'm not saying that he can't develop. I expect him to develop. He seems like a smart kid who is able to make the most of his game. He's done that in every stop he's had in his career. I just don't know that the base package here is something that if this was another draft, we would really be impressed by. So that's my thoughts on Fernando Mendoza. And it has taken up almost half of the episode here.
Has it really? Oh my gosh. Wow. We need to pick it up. And here I offered you the opening to talk about Ty Simpson next. Ty Simpson is the only other quarterback that really you'll hear about going into the draft. He's going to be overdrafted because there's just a lack of quarterbacks. He's from Alabama. He's slightly undersized, probably a bit of a project. We'll see if he amounts to anything, but he'll go in the first round, I'm sure, eventually. James, any thoughts on him?
Yeah, he is underdeveloped, he probably should stay at Alabama, but if he did and tried to come out next year, he probably wouldn't be drafted. So
might as well go now.
Yeah, be where you're the number two guy off the board, and that's all.
Yeah, because next year we got Arch and like a whole bevy of other quarterback prospects.
Yeah, it's going to be a much stronger class next year. But I think that by far the guy who everybody, not just in fantasy football, is concerned about, but really across all draft people in general, is the RB1 off the board here, Jeremiah Love from Notre Dame. We've talked about him before. I think that my biggest... Well, first, talking about Jeremiah Love as a prospect, he is the prototype for an elite NFL running back in this day and age. He has the physicals. He has the mentals. He is fast. He is quick. He has great vision. And I think, based on what I've seen, what he does best is that kind of intangible knowing where to go in the moment. I think he's a perfect NFL running back prospect. I'm very concerned about how high he's going to be drafted. I keep seeing the Titans being one of the favorites for him to go, and if he makes it past the Titans, the Giants getting him. I would hate to see him go to the Titans because I just don't believe that they can support him. And if he goes to the Giants, for football, that Cam Scadaboo, Jeremiah Love 1-2 would be electric. It would be so fun, but it would suck to have to split those carries for fantasy football. And we've seen it work out in the past, but it just always seems like there has to be one guy who does eventually eke out the other. So, Stu, Jeremiah Love.
How's it going for the Indiana guys? So Notre Dame, Indiana, top one, top two prospects here in this draft. And in 49 other states, it's just sports, but this is Indiana. Anyway.
And the number two running back off the board is also going to be from Notre Dame, and you are probably going to have Omar Cooper from IU drafted in the first round as
100%,
well.
100%. Absolutely. Go Hoosiers. Yeah, Jeremiah Love, definitely going to be a franchise-altering selection wherever he goes. He's going to command touches. He's incredibly talented. He's quick. He's shifty. He can catch the ball. He can pass block. He's the number one running back prospect, like I said, head and shoulders above the rest for a particular reason. I mean, you see the Titans. You see the Giants. Titans at 4, Giants at 5 and 10, as we alluded to earlier. I could see the Cardinals taking him as best player overall, which would be a little messy for their already kind of crowded running back room. Not that they have a lot of excellent prospects. I really would like to see him go to the Tennessee Titans just for the opportunity. And, you know, that's me saying that as a Colts fan, despite anything else. At 6, you're looking at the Browns, which would be hilarious because I'm sure they would love to grab him and then just mess up everything that they stand for like they always do. But it's going to be really important to, you know, continue watching and get excited for this. This will be one of the bigger storylines along the draft as it gets going. Because, you know, between these offensive players, there's going to be a lot of really, really talented offensive line and defense prospects going to places. So, you know, some people even think that he's going to fall a little bit. I don't think that is going to happen, but it's going to be really, really entertaining to watch regardless. You mentioned the other running back prospects. I don't think we necessarily have to talk about them as they're not going to be drafted as highly as these other guys. I want to kick it to the wide receiver room. And the three names that I hear more than really anything else, the number one, it's kind of give or take whoever you really like. The first one that I want to start with, James, is Carnell Tate, a junior from Ohio State, wide receiver. The thing about why I want to start with Carnell is that there are two programs that, just given their history, I pay more attention to their wide receiver prospects. Number one is LSU, and number two is Ohio State. it seems like, at least in recency bias in my own mind, that prospects out of these two programs translate a little bit better to the NFL. You went with one guy, Jerry Jeudy, back when we first started this podcast. And something that I want to bring back, James, is how would you like to do the CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy bet one more time?
Ooh, that's a fun one. Okay, so I will say I do think Carnell Tate is the best receiver out of this class, and I think most people are saying that as well. So are we doing Carnell Tate versus the field here?
No, I was going to say you pick who you want because I'm going to go against the grain. I'm going to say that I like everything about him except when I watch him play. I personally like Mekhi Lemon.
Really?
Yep. I'm going to throw that out there.
Okay. So I think we should talk about these other wide receivers before we make that bet.
Okay.
Because I think, for the most part, they're all pretty different prospects.
100%.
Like Carnell Tate, he's like the ideal X receiver, at least the ideal X receiver body type. And, you know, he's never been the wide receiver one on his team at Ohio State. Last year, he had to deal with Emeka Egbuka, and this year he had to deal with Jeremiah Smith. And Jeremiah Smith, who is kind of head and shoulders above him, a lot of people would say, is still not coming out till next year. So, well, that's also because people are saying that Jeremiah Smith is one of the greatest wide receiver prospects ever. But again, like you alluded, Ohio State just somehow does things differently with wide receivers and recruits them the same way Iowa recruits tight ends and Notre Dame recruits offensive linemen. It's insane. But Carnell Tate, elite hands, best contested catch guy you're going to see in this class. I don't really see a lot of ways that other receivers could be like a better prospect than him. But for Mekhi Lemon, which you mentioned, I think he's the kind of guy who could be kind of your PPR darling. He's going to be a slot guy. He's a little bit undersized, and he's not great physically. But he is incredibly smart, has great route running, has elite hands when not contested, but he struggles when challenged. That tells me that's the kind of guy who could kind of find soft spots in zones and make things happen as kind of a security blanket, whereas Carnell Tate, I feel like every guy who's an X receiver, just my instant thought is, oh, that's Mike Evans. when he's not exactly Mike Evans, there's not many people who are Mike Evans, but every X, hey, Mike Evans is the X, right? But I'm talking way too much here. Stu, tell us about Jordan Tyson so that I don't steal all of the mic time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's totally fine. Jordan Tyson is the third of the three that get alluded to as above the rest of the pack. And he is a little more, I guess there's a gray area there. So he has the athletic capability. He is graceful. He's fluid. He is good, you know, just body control. He's quick. He's talented. The only thing is that he's had a lot of injuries already through his college career, and that's really what's knocking his draft stock down. There are people out there that think he's the best prospect in this draft, and there's arguments, I think, to be made for all three of them. So he would be kind of the third we could make out of this bet. But, I mean, there are other guys, too. In this current mock that I'm looking at right now, off of NFL.com, Omar Cooper Jr. goes above Jordan Tyson in the rankings. So who's to say? But Tyson should be very, very exciting. Definitely going to be taken in the first round. Has a good, there are good reasons that he's talked about in the same conversation as these two, but just watching them and seeing the makeup and predicting who's going to have, because it ended up being this, it was CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, who has the best fantasy season coming out of the, what was it, the 2020 draft? 2019? I don't remember when we first started this. It had to be 2020.
It was 2020.
It had to be, yeah. So I think Mekhi Lemon, versus Carnell Tate is a really good, fun competition because, I mean, Mekhi Lemon, you say he's undersized, but his aggressiveness, his after-the-catch ability, his toughness, he goes about his business like a bulldog. He's fast. He's elusive. He makes people miss. You say he isn't great with contested catches, but in the same breath, you know, finding soft spots in zones and being a PPR kind of player, those two things are great. If he plays to his strength in zone scenarios, then he doesn't have to be contested. He looks a lot like Amon-Ra St. Brown to me, and Amon-Ra is one of my favorite players in the league right now. He's also a PPR darling, a red zone threat for the Detroit Lions. Something like that could very well be in Lemon's skill set. And the team that I want to see him go to, which would be really like, oh, piece de resistance, would be if Lemon gets drafted to the Rams at 12, I think. At 12? No, 13. Excuse me, at 13. I would feel really safe with the bet for Lemon in a Rams uniform in his first season over Carnell Tate to whomever gets him ahead of Lemon, because I'm assuming Carnell Tate goes before Lemon. Anyway, so that's my piece. I know I was supposed to talk about Jordan Tyson, and I started talking about Lemon, but he's just got the name for it, man. His name is Lemon. That's so awesome.
It is a great football player name, Mekhi Lemon. But I'll tell you, I'm not like over the moon excited about any of these guys. I have like a decent amount of like speculative hopefulness about all of them, but the guy who I weirdly am the most excited about, it's not any of the top three guys. I'm excited about Omar Cooper. And it's not for anything that makes a ton of sense, but he is like an average-sized quarterback, or sorry, wide receiver, if not a little bit stocky. And he uses that size to just be brutally physical. He is a great downfield blocker, which you might think for a wide receiver doesn't make a lot of sense for being a first-round talent. But kids at home listening who are trying to be wide receivers, you know who else is a great downfield blocker as a wide receiver and has a really similar profile to Omar Cooper? Puka Nacua. I see Omar Cooper as potentially being Puka Nacua Tua. So, not Tua, but, you know, anyway. But I see his profile, and I see the kind of things that he does, and I see how he's not afraid to really throw his weight around and be I'm trying to find coaching terms that are appropriate to use on the air. He'll kick your ass and get up, line up, and do it again, which isn't something you see from wide receivers a lot. And that really excites me about Omar Cooper. And also, he's got really good hands, but he's going to be a great slot. And despite the fact that he's not that fast, I am really excited about him. There are two other guys who are possible to go in the first rounds. Those are Denzel Boston from Washington and KC Concepcion from Texas A&M. Denzel Boston, much like Carnell Tate and Jordan Tyson, is kind of this X-style body. The difference is not only is he tall and fast and quick, but he's also big. He's kind of like that A.J. Brown-style body. He's an elite one-on-one guy. Not great with zone, but he does have great hands. He's another guy who could very easily be up there. And then KC Concepcion from A&M. He's a little bit of a weird one. I've seen him going in the first round in a lot of mocks, but I kind of feel like he won't, just because, one, he's small and he's skinny, even compared to these other small guys. And he's best with the ball in his hands, but he doesn't seem to have the route running ability or effort to get into those situations. So that's the only thing that weirds me out about him. So, Stu, to answer your question on the bet, I think we should see where these guys go first.
Okay. Let's Okay, we said CeeDee Lamb versus Jerry Jeudy before last draft. Just saying.
Okay, you know what?
We had to take that bet. We had to take that risk.
You know what, Stu? You know what, Stu? Give me Omar Cooper.
Okay, I was going to say, I'm giving you four prospects. If I take Lemon, you could have any of the other guys. Omar Cooper is your guy. I feel pretty secure. I'm going to go 2 for 2 in these who do you want to build your franchise around wide receiver prospects.
This feels dumber than the last one. I at least, like, there was good numbers to support picking Jerry Jeudy over CeeDee Lamb. There is not good numbers to support picking Omar Cooper over Carnell Tate. This is just a hunch, but you also believed in J.J. McCarthy last year.
Okay,
so
that's fair. So let me hear what team you'd like Omar Cooper Jr. to go to, because you're probably thinking somewhere like 15 to 30 range. Is there anybody in particular that is looking for a wide receiver, you think, and would jump on the Cooper train? The Coop train?
You know, where I would love to see him go, a little bit later in the draft, a team that is allegedly going to be moving their wide receiver one very soon. When the Eagles get rid of A.J. Brown, I would love to see Omar Cooper take his place. Hmm. Not that they're the same kind of wide receiver, but I think Omar Cooper would be great in that system.
Okay, that's interesting. I like it, honestly. The biggest worry I have is pick 16 to the Jets. The Jets are going to take some wide receiver. I'm sure the Browns probably will, too, at some point as well. Mm-hmm. So if one of our two guys goes to those places, good luck. Good luck. Yeah. Don't suck. All right.
See, that's kind of the thing. There's just a bunch of black holes throughout the board that could make any of these guys just completely useless.
That's the risk you run. You better hope somebody likes Tyson. Or at least I better hope somebody likes Tyson. But yes, let's talk about the last skill position group, that is the tight ends. There's really one name that I've heard pretty frequently, and that is from Oregon, Kenyon Sadiq. A little shorter, but very strong, good speed and athleticism. I don't hear much about anybody else, and he's really the guy. If there's a tight end prospect in this draft that you want to be aware of that's going to be fantasy relevant here in 2026, it's going to be this one. He's a good blocker, which is, of course, very important for a tight end prospect. We know that rookie tight ends generally start slower, but in the last several years, we've been a little bit spoiled by the likes of Brock Bowers from Detroit. What's his name? Sam Laporta. And then I think there was one other that was doing really well, like a Tyler Warren or Colston Loveland, these people that had really good rookie seasons. You don't necessarily look for great rookie seasons with tight ends, but he's one that definitely could in the right situation, James. In mocks, you see him, at least the one that I'm looking at, it sees him going at 15 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to supplant Kate Otten. That wouldn't be too bad, especially since Mike Evans is now out of there. There's going to be some targets vacated in the Buccaneers offense. What are you thinking about this guy, James, to round out our skill position conversations?
From what I've seen, he's kind of above average at most things. You mentioned him being a little bit short, and for a tight end, that's true, but he's still 6'3". Like, that's that's not small. And the guy who's expected to be the tight end two out of this draft, Eli Stowers from Vanderbilt, he's almost the exact same profile, or at least physical profile. He's very different as a tight end. But for Sadiq, his body style is one thing, but he does do physical things at an elite level. He is fast. He's not that agile, but he's really good making vertical plays with the ball. As a blocker, he's average. He gets overpowered a bit, but he does have good technique, which that's really about all you want with a tight end. You can teach him how to be better. One thing that's been concerning with him is his drop rate, which you don't really see that much with the tight end to Eli Stowers. But with Eli Stowers, he can't block at all. He is a receiving first guy. He's fast. He has great route running, wide receiver level athleticism, but the rest is kind of a big problem. He's definitely a project, but I think Kenyon Sadiq is as well. But Stu, what is something you are most excited to see tomorrow as we get ready to wrap up the show here?
I want to see who takes Jeremiah Love. I called him a franchise-altering selection. He would be a franchise-altering selection for anybody who takes him, but there are teams in particular that you'd be really excited to see him go to, especially there in the top 10 picks, which I currently expect him to go. That's probably what I'm looking forward to most now outside of who takes Mekhi Lemon James. So what are you looking forward to the most come tomorrow night?
I, more than anything, want to see what gets Mel Kiper foaming at the mouth. I know that, well, I want to see a lot of offensive linemen taken during this draft, especially in the first half of the draft, but I can't wait to see something that Mel Kiper thinks is just a sure thing, and having them fall to the fifth round again and just have him continuously foaming at the mouth because Shedeur Sanders is one of the best prospects and this blah, blah, blah. And that was so funny last year. I'd love to see something like that again. I don't think it's going to happen, but yeah, I like seeing people on TV getting their feathers a little ruffled.
Yeah, he's entertaining, absolutely. Well, closing thoughts, thank you all for listening to us. You can reach out to us if you'd like to interact. We are on X and on Instagram at FantasyFootBeer on both platforms. We do take beer requests at our Gmail, fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. Make sure to tune into the draft. Have a good time, drink a beer, see where all these people are going, and just get excited for the 2026 fantasy football season. It marches ever closer, even though it feels pretty far now. It's going to be on us before we know it, and it's always going to begin with knowing where these young men are getting drafted. James, take us home for the evening.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are less than 24 hours away. Actually, I think we're a little bit over 24 hours away from the start of the first round of the NFL draft tomorrow. When I expect most of you will be listening to this, we will be preparing for a collection of 32 young men who are going to have their lives changed forever as they become NFL football players. You too can have your life forever changed by listening to Fantasy Footbeer and getting much better at fantasy football in the process, so that when your fantasy draft comes around in August or September or whenever you end up having it, you can change your life for the better. So, with that, for all of us here at Fantasy Footbeer, for Dr. Michael Stewart, for Pixel the Cat, for Indy the Dog, I am James Kemp. Good night and good job.